I thought we could just introduce the show.
Okay, why don't we introduce the show?
So today we've got David Fulks and Rodney Deegans coming around.
Oh, that's good.
And we're going to talk about stuff.
Wow. We best get on then.
Right. Without further ado, we shall remove the echo, which makes it sound as if we're inside a room.
A very small room.
And run it through the outdoor shed filter for the rest of the show.
Okay.
There you go. You can get home now.
That was easy.
You're alright, Matthew, you got a headache or something?
I'm on the aspirin. On the down low, religions and guns and ammo. In my mind, I made my mind up. I don't mean to take your time up. In my heart, I know the real trick. Baby, I know. Yeah, so I was wondering about yesterday, trying to think of what it is I wanted to talk about. And of course, in order to think, I had to drink as well. So now I'm not feeling too good.
Or a thinker. Yeah.
A bit of both simultaneously.
So you did the thinking last night and you'll do the talking today. Is that the plan? Or?
So are we on now, are we?
Oh, kind of.
Oh, that's all. We've only got another year to live, haven't we?
Right.
It depends. We're talking about the US pastor that said we're going to be annihilated by a comet in October.
I thought it was a flying spaghetti monster reference.
So what's in October? Is that this year?
Yeah, apparently. So, unless he's miscalculated again.
He probably has.
So, I hate it when you do, end of the world, a calculation on the back of your beer mat and you get them wrong.
It's so embarrassing.
Because once is bad enough, but,
on the back of the envelope.
I like the ones where when the world ends, but it actually carries on for everyone, but they haven't actually realised it's ended. But you knew it ended, and you've actually become elevated into a new sort of wonderful life or something.
I was wandering around, just sort of, wow, everything's so intense.
Oh, I didn't.
And everybody else
that.
Is just
so
getting on with
has
it.
Already
That's right.
Ended.
Yeah, they haven't realised. Yeah,
you're saying the world has already.
Well,
ended.
I had a friend once who told me the world was going to end in 2003, and we were invited to a conference all about it, and it was about aliens and they're going to come and take them away and stuff. And then it turned
2003. That was never believable. That's ridiculous.
Well,
yeah, but it's got to be always way in the future.
Well, apparently it did happen, but normal people didn't notice. So, which is fine with me. If you don't notice the world ends, then it's
yes. That's a thorny philosophical issue. If the world ends and nobody notices, but it really is.
I find it really just annoyingly convenient, though. Yeah. Nothing really happened. But did it? Yeah. You can get away with that one.
That's only because you didn't notice.
Yeah, I'm such a philistine.
Oh, I guess I'm so
fourth dimension instead of seventh.
And I'm screwed. My head hurts. Everything's just gone wrong for me today. Every now and then there are times when somebody in a position of authority says something that completely reveals where they're coming from. And I thought this was one of these times where you all know, the world works like this, but you don't hear it stated so plainly. This is at a informational meeting for business owners run by Council's Director of Corporate Business, Craig Milburn. Oh. I thought his title was GM. But I rather fancy that after all the local government scandals across New South Wales, just calling someone the council GM is tantamount to libel. So they've had to give him another title.
GM,
I think.
He's the director of money.
Okay. That makes sense. Because he's quoted here talking to local businesses about the people who are going to visit Coffs Harbour during this car racing business.
Oh.
He says, we have to make sure these visitors don't have a dollar left on their credit cards when they leave. We need to ask, how can I get them through
Max
my door?
Them out.
How can I get them into my area? And I thought, this is our next tourism campaign, just right there.
Hmm.
Come to Coffs Harbour, we'll bleed you dry.
Yeah.
I think Australians respond to that kind of directness.
Yeah.
You know, like being.
But is there anything wrong with that so much?
Well, if I was a holiday maker and I was reading the local paper, I wouldn't feel particularly kindly disposed towards someone who just wanted to empty my credit card. I mean, he doesn't say anything about providing a nice, providing a good service.
That's what I was telling you about rock and roll. That's why I'm into rock and roll. I'm trying to get up a rock and roll event happening during that week.
Just say rock and roll again.
Rock and roll. What was it?
You really want an event? Though, yeah. You need to use the jetty, you know. And you got so your rock and roll event needs to be on the jetty because you've got to get the jetty in there somewhere.
Rock and roll at the jetty. You want indie bands down the jetty.
Indie.
What about beer on the pier?
Beer on the pier.
It rhymes at least.
But they've already
got
the
pier.
Pee off the pier, which is what it becomes.
Oh, I thought you were talking
starts as beer on the pier.
I thought you were talking about the pier hotel.
Okay.
They've got beer.
They have got, yeah. It's kind of, well, yeah, that's been done then.
Now we're talking about the car park at the Jetty Shopping Centre.
Sounding better and better. Rock and roll in the car park.
Rock and roll in the car park.
There's going to be a car boot sale as well.
Was it indie?
There's already one.
I don't know. You guys
just need to add rock and roll.
The latest slang, the latest in term for.
You'll just have to ask. We wouldn't know. We're old farts. You have to go ask Evan.
I think it's rap music.
He's out the front.
Is it rap music?
A rap.
Is that pretty new?
I don't know. Rap's been around for quite a while too.
I think you might be right.
Yeah, since the late 70s.
And
it hasn't changed a bit.
No.
Which I still don't get it.
The revolution will not be televised.
I personally think that rap music is a conspiracy masterminded by English teachers to make performance poetry popular with kids.
So it's a kind of benign conspiracy.
Well, I don't think it's benign because
right.
I don't think much
might.
Of performance poetry, but yeah, it's basically just taking what people with bongos and goatees and berets were doing and making it a lot more sort of
I teach you how to get a percentage from a fraction. I teach you everything you need to know about fractions. Fractions, what's that? Lights, camera, action.
Which is. Depending on how you measure it, it is the Star Trek is the most watched movie ever produced in Finland, which is maybe not saying
Star
much.
Star Trek
in Finland, Star Trek.
So yeah, there's not much to do up there as well.
No,
I've heard.
Yeah. It's a kind of taking the Mickey of Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah.
But not doing a very good job of it.
It's probably the big production from a movie website, which is called Rickamovie.com, right? But it's kind of like for the movie world, you go and look at it and the way it's set up, and it's pretty much doing for movies what Eurovision has done for music, and then it's kind of great, a democratic device, but movies aren't made democratically, and that's the problem, I think. Right. Have you seen the whole thing, or at least the
no,
trailer?
No, there's just a trailer, and the trailer looks quite funny
and quite good. Like,
but you can't
made,
tell.
But story-wise,
aren't made democratically.
No,
what does that mean?
It means they're quite fascist. I mean, there's someone at the top going, "Do this," you know, and there's efforts to try and stem that and not do that because it's not very creative.
Yeah,
but
I know she brought your camera, but you didn't bring your writing crop and
not
choppers.
This time. Yeah.
Oh.
That's for the editing suite.
Yeah.
Well, do you think the movies could be improved if they were made more democratic? I think
I don't honestly don't know. I'd put it this way: it's not at the small end of town, like the independent movies.
It would have to be
yes, they're fine like that. But at the big money stuff,
there would have to be a certain level of that democratic approach, though. Because
I don't get me wrong. I suppose it's.
But at the same time, you need to have someone who's going to ultimately get the stick if it all falls down.
Oh, no, that's right. The person at the top has got some.
Otherwise, the movie will have no spice at all.
Yeah, there's got to be a central vision,
yeah.
To things.
That's kind of what I mean.
I think what the problem is when
James Cameron inevitably comes up in this conversation.
I'll try not to bring up James Cameron. But I think the problem is when things go awry in films or television is the too many cooks problem. And I noticed that particularly when I watched the first episode of the new series of Torchwood the other day, and I just thought, yuck. It was... They had some co-production money from an American cable channel. So they, because it was a co-production between BBC Cardiff and this American network, they had to film at least part in Wales. They had to have American actors. They had to have this, that, and the other. And the whole, I was just sitting there the whole hour thinking, right, that box is ticked. That box is ticked. Nah. This is all done by the numbers, and it's just excruciating to sit through.
Well, that's why I thought Iron Sky came across as a bit like it seemed to be ticking the boxes of what was to a lot of Europeans, especially Scandinavians, still a hot button issue, which is Nazism, which you think
do you remember the newspapers in London used to always regularly, like the Sun newspaper and the was it Nexus magazine and all those real, you know, barrel scraping crystal gazing right. stuff, and they used to have the ones about Nazi planes found on the moon, and
fun? Because I just didn't think there was maybe there is a big market for that. I think
definitely a very European sort of. They love the title, you know, Nazis on the moon. You're just kind of like
If anything, it seems to me like a Hollywood high concept film, where you can just say what the film is in one sentence and you've got it. You know, the classic example being Mark Kermode always says is Arnold Schwarzenegger, Danny DeVito and their twins, or Snakes on a Plane. The title tells you everything. And
that was another case of democracy gone wrong in filmmaking, or just an online, I think you know the story of that one,
Similarly,
everyone added to it until they came up with
You just say space Nazis, and everyone goes, "Oh, great! I'll watch that."
But have they? I don't know. I mean,
I don't know. I'll give it a go.
It's the most successful out of that crowdfunding model.
Yeah,
and I'm certainly not.
But
saying the jury's out on it.
How can you say it's successful? It hasn't been released yet.
In the sense that it's generated.
They raised $120,000 for their Australian production.
You and I know about it. Is a factor, and we're not in this kind of business of making films at that level anyway, so how do we know about it? Because it's good marketing, it's just viral marketing, and if you can get that for a start for free, you're doing pretty well in that market model.
The idea when I started wandering about and drinking too much yesterday and thinking about what we were going to talk about was basically that there's a whole bunch of I don't know what you'd call it, hoo-ha, hype, to do with the National Broadband Network and various other things. You know, every shop in Sawtelle has got a sign up in the window saying, find us on Facebook now. The thing I was thinking yesterday is that none of... we can talk about sort of technology and what the potential is for it and how it's going to change the world and everything, but it occurred to me yesterday that because we're all old farts, we're not what you would call digital natives.
I'm not old.
Well, Rodney's the youthful one.
He's the rock and roller.
He's representing the youth of the country.
Yeah. If only the people on the podcast could see him now in his winkle pickers and his slick back hair.
But they can because we're filming it. So.
Oh, shit. Just don't mention Doctor Who.
Oh, you've done it now.
Oh, shit.
So it occurred to me that we're not what someone like Clay Shirky or Cory Doctorow might call digital natives. We're sort of digital immigrants. We might have been quite young when the boat arrived with our parents, who still don't speak the language.
Buying us Commodore 64 for Christmas.
Yeah, we're of that age where if we were introduced to computers young, it was, you know, you'd distribute software by typing out the program listing, code listing that's in the back of the PC magazine. There's a whole generation of people who've come after us who've like never known a world without the internet, or even, God help them, never known a world without Facebook and Twitter. And the older generations are sort of struggling to come to grips with this. And there's a whole lot of just nonsense and hysteria and hype all sort of mixed into this. And I suppose what I wanted to do was to sort of talk about things from a
from
the point of view of someone who's almost a digital native and is comfortable with the ideas. And one of the things I found yesterday for you know, an example of how the older generation really isn't coping. In the paper yesterday, I was reading a tiny little quote from the South Australian Attorney General saying the internet operates under, quote, the law of the jungle, with online laws struggling to keep pace. I thought, a load of bullshit. If something's illegal just because you use a computer and a network to do it, doesn't mean it's no longer illegal.
I can't murder those people by my email program.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah.
It's just so restrictive for psychopaths like
us.
Yeah.
Homicide wants to be free.
Yeah.
I've written a great program which shot tennis rackets at people's heads remotely. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Are we talking virtual deaths or...?
No, real.
I was using Sawtell Tennis Club website, which Matthew had inadvertently given me the administrative password to. And I programmed it to shoot tennis rackets at people's heads and kill them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've taken about 10 people out so far, but I realise I have to stop now because apparently it's against the law.
Because it's done by a computer.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
It wasn't you.
I might have... I just treat it like a game at my end, but, you know... So I've open sourced it.
It's open sourced.
Like the source code.
No, very, very clever. That's what we do. So open source is another term.
So there's a game get open source in there as many times as we can.
Yeah, well
until Matthew's head explodes.
The Free Software Foundation had their quarterly or annual magazine they send out. Had a little article where one of the blokes, Matthew will know the guy's name probably, some bloke, was having a bang on about... Source Code, the movie.
John Sullivan.
Because the science was shonky.
Well, because they're demonising Source Code, whatever Source Code is. You know, everyone's going, Source Code, it's to do with computers and it's bad.
Yeah.
That's what the movie's saying. So from a Free Software Foundation. Get away, dog. Sorry.
Source Code is just another one of those things that gets picked on. It's nice because it's mysterious. I mean, you know, we could argue that for a long time, the Brits have been picked on as always being the bad guys. I mean, look at Star Wars. It's just, the whole empire was just Brits picking on nice American rebels.
They actually dubbed it in England, so they were Americans.
Yeah. So and Darth Vader's from the West Coast.
He was Welsh.
Where's he from? He's from
I'm
the
your
West...
father, Luke. Hey, up,
he was. He's from the West Coast.
He's Cornish. He came to my school.
David Prowse.
When Star Wars came out, he'd actually moved on because he didn't make much money from Star Wars. And the job he got directly after Star Wars was as the Green Cross Man. And they had a road safety campaign in Cornwall. And he came to my school dressed in... Before Lycra, they had spandex. So he was dressed in white and green spandex.
There was a time before Lycra?
Oh, yeah. And he was standing there in front of the class and he was saying, "Now then, kids, you've got to be careful when you cross the road."
And he could have been the voice of Darth Vader.
Yeah, and we
wonder
were told
why not.
He was Darth Vader and none of us believed it. We're like, he's not Darth Vader. He's too Cornish for that.
Look, it's Green Crossman.
Looks like you two need a lesson in crossing the road. My little friend is going to show you how. First, find a safe place to cross. When there is no traffic near, walk straight across, looking and listening all the time. We won't be there when you cross the road, so always use the Green Cross Man.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, I know. As Star Wars, it's very hard to not get on tangent. But okay, so my father-in-law has just been over from the UK, and we sort of have. He comes over for a month at a time, once a year. So we tend to have these kind of big chats we never have any throughout the year. And we ended up on Facebook talking about that. Now, he's in his 70s. So all of this is what you're saying. It's completely new to him. And he's just bedeviled by it. He's completely scared that it's going to destroy life as we know it, in the sense that Facebook or social networking, at least, is potentially just full of paedophiles that are going to fiddle with kids.
Oh yeah,
and that's you know, that's sold to him in the press over there endlessly, which is okay. Well, it's just a new thing to worry about, maybe, but yeah, I think there's that kind of element is always just looking for the things that potentially can go wrong with this new technology, rather than looking at the fact that with every technology, there's always this worry.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like the terrorist threat. There's loads of businesses who thought terrorism. What a great thing. We can make a bundle off this by basically saying our product, you know, do what we want because it'll stop terrorism. And the same goes for...
Buy this dishwashing liquid. We'll make terrorists squeaky clean. Everyone's then on the
act. Same thing will goes for the...
You haven't noticed that in my...
No, I haven't noticed that.
Toothpaste. Now. Subliminal. It's got terrorism control. Oh, 24-hour terrorism control. Ring of confidence.
I'll watch out for it now that you've alerted me.
See, you know, and this is going on and we don't even really notice it.
I think in a nutshell, the whole NBN thing, the way that the NBN is going to, the National Broadband Network is going to be structured, it's going to be plugging us into Facebook so that we can give our information to Facebook or YouTube or... Well, the NBN is going to be, it's going to be a one-way path. I mean, it's going to be a great way. Like, every time I connect to the NBN, when I've got my NBN plugged in, I'll go and, you know, try and get an email, and that message I'm sending to get my email will bounce off its way down to Sydney and then bounce its way to wherever my email server is on the internet, grab the email, back to Sydney, and then back up to me again. But if I've got a physical pipe going from my house to a junction box here in, I don't know, Taormina or wherever the hell it is, what, and I'm sending an email, say, to, or a message to Matthew, a bit of traffic to Matthew, why can't it go up there to Sawtell and over to Matthew?
Is that the NBN or not?
That's the NBN. The NBN is going to be going through this big central server, which has got a gigantic sieve to catch all the paedophiles and the, you know, the crazy terrorists and all these imaginary things. And the government will be...
Because it shouldn't be allowed.
The government will be... What? So I shouldn't be allowed to...
Actually, it's not allowed. Sorry. I just caught myself saying that.
Feedback here. Not. I'm not addressing like whether or not it's right or wrong to filter it. I just think from a technical standpoint that they're just building this gigantic network to go to this gigantic data center or this gigantic machine down there, which is going to be controlling everything centrally. But the internet's always been built in a very, very grassroots kind of way, where, you know, someone might have had a computer in their, you know, office and gone, hey, I could connect it to that computer over there. And you know, there's been these little cells of people connecting up, and then they go, wow, we could connect to that office on the other side of the street, let's run a wire over. And suddenly there's two offices connected, and maybe there's like a school over there, and then, wow, we can connect. And that's how the internet's grown. They haven't been sitting there saying, can I connect to this central server here? I mean, that's a very capitalistic, centralised way of working, which is not how the internet has traditionally worked.
That is CompuServe or... AOL or all those other...
Is it analogous to... You know, maybe it's just because I work off metaphors, but easier, because this stuff is baffling for me. Was it like, you know, when we were first building roads, at first it was kind of like, especially in the States, it was like, well, a lot of private roads, we can fund this one, we'll build one here, and we'll build one there, and then finally, pretty much during the Depression, to get things kicked over, they just went, right, let's have a national road strategy and everything, and they built these enormous highways.
No, more like the trains. In London, if you want to get anywhere on a train, you have to go to London first.
Right, because that's
what it's more like. Mm. It's more like...
But the internet is actually more analogous to the post office, say. The internet is not necessarily anything to do with the hardware layer or anything. It's just a set of protocols that essentially say, I agree to talk to the other computers on this network using this set of protocols. So the internet is basically, you connect to one computer and that computer can be connected to another computer, which is connected to another computer, to another computer, and they'll all basically route traffic for each other. And that's like saying, okay, I stick a letter in the post office box on the street, gets collected by the Sawtell post office, and then they sort it, and if it's within the local area, the post office will deliver it, and if it's somewhere else, they'll send it off to the next post office down the road.
And that sounds pretty efficient. Is that and the internet pretty efficient like that.
Mm. Yeah. Historically, the problem has been that that network, the internet, stops at a certain point. It was you know, originally an academic project and expanded. The problem of how do we get homes and small businesses connected to this network was traditionally referred to as the last mile problem, and it still is.
Yeah.
And the way they solved the last mile problem initially was using the copper wire network that the telephone system uses. Now, that copper wire network is not itself the internet, but it can create a bi-directional connection between you and your ISP.
Is that what ADSL was?
Phone line, yeah.
So they're basically sort of cheating. They're not connecting you to the internet. They're connecting you to your ISP via the phone network, and your ISP is connected to the internet. And what I think we had the opportunity to do, if the government was to say, hey, we're going to throw, you know, $500 squillion at this problem of the last mile, what we should do is just extend the internet to people's homes.
Right.
But what they actually did was to qualitatively essentially duplicate the existing problem, which is we aren't getting the internet, we're getting another network that connects us to the internet. It's in between us and the internet, and it may be faster, but it's qualitatively no different.
So the government wouldn't have recognised that there was any problems with the way it kind of is.
If you're going to throw that amount of money at the problem, why wouldn't you just extend the internet out to the houses? And, you know, my computer would be connected to, as Ruben says, all the other houses in the street, and a junction box on the corner, and that junction box would essentially do routing. That junction box would be like your post office, which says, okay, is this packet of data going to someone on this street, in which case just send it on to them, or is it somewhere further afield? So it sends it on to the next junction box, and then the next router to be geeky about it.
This is another extension of the age-old argument, though, isn't it? It's a practical realities versus what we want.
Well, the thing is, there's nothing impractical about
financial reality.
There's nothing impractical about this, because you've still got to put in the fiber optic network. You've still got to spend squillions of dollars tearing up the street and so on. And it would not add substantially to the cost if you just throw in a router, which might cost a few cents if you're buying them in bulk every now and then to direct traffic. The problem is that if you do that and you actually genuinely give every resident in Australia a real internet connection, then where do you set up the toll booth? How do you charge for this?
Because it's a bit like the telephone network. When you're making a telephone call, it's not actually costing any money to make the phone call, or not much money, apart from supporting the infrastructure. Once the infrastructure is supported, all you need is the 3 volts and the line to keep it running.
Has there been any sort of studies or consideration of that last mile problem? I mean, before this was rolled out?
I think the problem is that it's really not the last mile problem. Because what is the internet? As I said, it's basically just an agreement between users of computers that, you know, their computers would talk the same language to direct traffic between computers. So we're not the last mile. And if we think we are, then we're going to sort of head down this path where we've already sort of been taking, which is to think of ourselves as passive consumers of content that other people create somewhere else off in that sort of mysterious space called the internet. And they throw ads at us and we buy products, and the internet essentially is a television with a buy now switch. The way we ought to think about it, I think, is that we think about this problem as being the first mile problem. That us in our homes and in our businesses or whatever, we are the internet. Because when you're on Facebook, you're not on Facebook to talk to Mark Zuckerberg, you're on Facebook to talk to your family and friends.
Yeah.
And as long as we think of ourselves as passive recipients of services that others provide, then Mark Zuckerberg and Google or Steve Jobs or whoever is always going to be in that position of being the person who mediates that communication. And there's no technical reason why it has to be that.
No, you're right. I see what you're saying, but I think what I'm trying to get my head around is whether or not these are like a perception based. You know, should we just perceive the internet different? Because it's a big ask for most people, I think, to consider, you know, changing their perception of the way the internet is. Because I suppose most of us have considered up to now that as part of the capitalist system, you buy stuff, and the going the other way thing. A lot of people are involved with, and it's growing, I think. I feel like it is. Most people would say that they have a lot more control over the content that they buy in the first place. Mm. So I think that's happening. But it sounds like there's a sort of need for a perception change rather than a hardware change in that respect. Do you know what I mean?
I think...
Is that part of it?
I think to a certain extent there's a generational aspect to this.
Yeah.
Because there are people who've been brought up on television, and they're never going to think of themselves as creative people.
Yeah.
So I mean, when I went to school, I had an English teacher who said, "Hey, you're a really good writer. You know what you can do to help hone your writing skills?
Watch lots of Doctor Who."
No, that would have been a better suggestion. But she said, you should start writing letters to the editor of the Sydney Morning Herald. And I thought, I'm not a grumpy 80-year-old man. I am now, but I wasn't then.
But there was a time.
And you know, I'm not ready to start writing YOY letters to the Sydney Morning Herald. But the thing is, back in those, 25 years ago, that was your only option for creative expression. I mean, now you can just have a blog.
Yeah.
And you know, it might just be for you and your friends, but it could be, a path to becoming a professional writer. It doesn't matter. But you can get an audience like that, and it doesn't have to pass through the filter of the editor of the Sydney Morning Herald's letters page.
Of course, there's a trade-off, because you're buying the Sydney Morning Herald's audience, which is enormous, which with a blog is very hard. You can't just go... You've got to pass through the filter to get to that audience.
The thing is that the potential audience of a blog is anyone who's connected to the internet, and the
Sydney Morning Herald getting a letter in there. I wrote about 15 letters to the Sydney Morning Herald, not one got printed, and the very last time I went and abused them, and then they printed the very next letter.
Yes, please.
I never wrote them another letter after that.
Yeah. So they did in the end. It's a question of one. How many.
So and
how much
and,
noise you make.
And so my basic point is that I think we have a window of opportunity where we can change our attitude towards our place in society, and we can shift from that. Well, there are people who are professional writers, and I'm never going to be one of them, so I just don't write. Or there are people who are professional filmmakers or professional musicians, and I'm never going to be one of them, and so I just shouldn't bother.
I agree.
To shifting to this, more shades of grey sort of thing, where you have a spectrum of participation. Which up at one end is the professional end, which has always been there. But this side of that, there's a whole sort of range of possibilities open for people to make short films, to make music or whatever, and to get an audience without having to depend on a Colonel Tom Parker or EMI or Hollywood saying, yes, we're going to give you loads of money, and that's how you get your audience. Because you don't need loads of money to get an audience.
Yeah. Well, I think... Is that dependent on the way the NBN is rolled out? Because I think that can happen anyway. I mean, what about what Rodney was saying before about the idea that the way that the NBN is being rolled out could be more efficient? What if the feed into the backbone, that is high speed, becomes mobile because the tech or the packaging gets small enough to be mobile? Does that make sense? Because our one at home is mobile, which is okay. I presume that the software is getting possible to package that up smaller and smaller to be not a problem. Is that part of what you're saying? Do you see what I mean? Like getting getting the best of, like, what just, it seems to me like what you're after is, can actually be a subset of what they're rolling out anyway.
I think my complaint with the NBN, it has two sides to it. One is that it's just not an efficient network infrastructure if we assume that a lot of data is going to be between people in who are both sharing the same local area. So as Ruben says, it just doesn't make sense for me. If I'm running a website for a business which is primarily concerned with, say, clients in this geographical area, it makes no sense, except from an economic point of view, to have the website sitting on a server in the US, yeah, and all the communication between me and my clients, who are not more than 10 kilometers away from me, to go via a data center in Portland, Oregon.
But the world's not efficient. I mean, that argument that it's not efficient, I don't think it's going to win.
Well, and but I think
we're all using websites right now, you know, yeah, local websites which are hosted in the States, and, yeah, and we're having, you know, it's working. I think
Dark Labs hosted in the States, which is cheaper.
I think what you're talking about here is, yeah, is that this is an Australian version of the American discussion they're having at the moment about net neutrality.
I think I'm...
You've always got to have economics.
The thing is there's no technical reason why you couldn't, as a business or as a person in your own home, have your web server sitting on your desk, and that's efficient and you have control over it.
Is this the freedom box that you mentioned?
So right. The freedom box leads into that, but the problem with the architecture of the NBN is that it's assuming that we as mere plebs are never going to want to use a network like that. It's assuming that most of the data is going to go to and from us and the internet, which is located in a bunker underneath the desert in California somewhere or something.
But nothing apart from a cultural shift, which would get more people to accept that they can be not just consumers but producers of content. I think that is happening to a point. There is that is possible within this system, though, the way that it's being rolled out. I mean, I can still use the efficiency that, even if it could be better, more efficient, I can still produce content, don't you think?
And where do you upload it to? Facebook? YouTube?
Yeah, already do that. Okay. And you're saying that shouldn't be the... That just happens to be the most ubiquitous.
That's problematic on... for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
One is, as
well, YouTube has their terms of conditions when you upload it. You know, you have to agree that
that's the trade-off. I know. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the trade-off. But if you hosted it on your own little website, it would never be as popular.
I would have to invent all of that technology, though, wouldn't I?
The technology mostly is there.
Yeah.
So this is what the Freedom Box project is about, and I suppose we can talk about that. So the Freedom Box project was started a couple of years ago, basically to address that issue of, yes, we can run our own web servers, run our own email servers, do our own social networking, run our own sort of privacy/anonymity software, and do it all on computers that are sitting in our own homes. So if I want to build a social network that involves you and me and Ruben and Rodney, then that social networking takes place on my computer and your computer, and, you know, it never touches a third party who can potentially, you know, spy on us or on behalf of the US government or copyright cartels or whatever. And that's a serious concern, as Evan Moglen, the guy who's leading the Freedom Box project, says. You know, in the case of Egypt, they were slow to respond to what was going on Facebook and Twitter and what have you. From now on, those countries are going to be a lot more alert to what's going on there. And the thing is, if we are all dependent on Facebook, you know, dictators who want to stop the next rebellion have only to give Mark Zuckerberg an offer he can't refuse, and they can quash that rebellion.
And if they're all in the NBN, where everything's going through a central data bank in the main city of that country,
yeah,
they've got complete control of what happens on the internet.
I kind of see what you're saying now, but this is the problem, is I don't really understand enough of this stuff. Is it the problem of centralization of any of this technology is, like any homogenous system, it's subsist, you know, if there's a disease of some sort, you're going to get hammered like across the whole network.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So do you also mean, well, I suppose to do with bugs and like, as well, are these problems or not? Is that unrelated?
I mean, one of the important principles of the internet is the internet itself just shifts data around. It doesn't care what the data is. So it could be
so unfeeling.
Yes. But that's part of, the genius of it is that, you know, the people who invented the internet never thought about YouTube. They never envisaged a day when millions of people would sit at their computer every day and look at funny pictures of cats with captions.
Just like you are.
That's exactly what
the network.
They were thinking, the horror of the cats.
I love cats. I love every kind of cat. I just want to hug all of them, but I can't. Can't hug every cat. Can't hug every cat. So anyway, I am a cat lover and I love to run. I'm sorry, I'm thinking about cats again.
Well, there's one of two. Well, here's the thing, though, and this is maybe a cultural shift that we haven't adapted to because our generation isn't used to this. But here's a girl of the Facebook generation that I got chatting to, and she was talking because I was like amazed at the kind of stuff that she just put on her Facebook thing, right? And I was talking to her about it, and she was like, so she's about 10 years younger. And I was like, do you not worry that, you know, usual argument, you know, there could be a job interview down the road or something like that, blah, blah. And she's like, yeah, but you're forgetting that it's not just me doing it. Every single person I know does this. And so if it's a question of my employer going, oh, hang on, what about this? I could go, well, what about you? And that's what, and extrapolate that out to a culture-wide, you know, kind of thing where it's like, well, we've all got the dirt on each other and we're all sharing so much information that it becomes boring. Your privacy becomes irrelevant. Is one thing that's happening culturally.
Your privacy is never irrelevant. I mean, that's how friendships...
I'd like to think it's not, but this is the cultural... This is the thing we're up against.
There was a really interesting podcast I linked to last night on the microblog. I didn't type anything about it, but it was just a link I did for myself, really. And it was the BBC Thinking Aloud podcast. What are we in now? July 21st, I suppose, around then. And it was about privacy. But from a psychological standpoint... And there was a great phrase this woman used where she talked about privacy as in privacy islands. You have islands of privacy.
I think ever tinier islands of privacy that are scattered about in this great and increasing ocean of accessibility in our lives.
You have to work to have your privacy. If you don't work for it, you have no privacy. I could just spill the beans about everything in my life to you right now. Or I could just say, well, no, actually, my wife knows this, and my kids know this, and you know this, and we all have our little islands of privacy. And I think that Facebook's just a continent of privacy, which everyone's dwelling on currently. And I think that even when you're posting stuff on Facebook, you're doing it because, you know, you're having a little, you're showing off to your friends about something. And that's, I guess that's the dangerous thing, is because suddenly all those islands are joining up.
Those islands are joining up
into a continent.
It's not something that we've encountered before, so it's no way of saying, oh, it'll be okay. But there's also no way of saying, well, it won't be. I really wonder if it is a paradigm shift. Look at the way that Facebook in particular is a really great manifestation of the way the internet has changed us, is that I think it's probably akin to when we first got cars and we didn't have any seatbelts. You know, and we're just getting mangled in the things until someone, we might have to have some regulation here. And you know, maybe it is about not just regulation, but etiquette and retraining ourselves and all that sort of stuff. I wonder if that's part of that cultural shift that goes with it. The NBN is just the hardware of stuff that's going to make this more accessible for a lot more people and a lot faster and all that. But in the end, we may be on the edge of changing the kind of way our brains and everything are hardwired to adapt to this level of privacy invasion. Because we don't think of it here in Coffs Harbour. It's no big deal because you can be pretty private. You can turn the thing off. You can not go on Facebook. But for a lot of people in their jobs now, it's you've got to be on social networking.
I think we could quite easily do this transition to thinking more like digital natives socially, handle basically what Dave was saying, the cultural shift without the NBN, without any kind of faster internet connectivity.
This always happens though with this technology. It gets laid in, and the kind of applications it gets used for within 2-3 years becomes completely warped because companies pick up on new ways of using it with new other additional technology, and you can't control it. And I'm always going to struggle with the idea that I don't know enough about this technology to know really what's wrong with it. But I do know that enterprise normally picks up a pretty good way of working it out and finding a new application for it. But it does. I kind of see what you're saying. It's like a solution looking for a problem. If the internet and everything that we have now works, it does seem like a big wadge of cash for not quite sure what.
These kids at school, they all have these cool little laptops, and the Department of Education and Training, at least in New South Wales, this isn't Australia-wide, but for New South Wales, the laptops are completely locked down. They can't do anything on them. And to log in, they have to, the first time they log in, they have to go to campus to log in, and it's all Windows sort of security and stuff, and it's very time-consuming.
There's a guy in the Drupal developer community called Dimitri Gasker. Ruben knows the story I'm going to tell because I tell it to everybody. So Dimitri Gasker sort of burst onto the scene in 2008 or so, 2009, and he came out of nowhere and he started working on all sorts of things. He started contributing to Drupal Core and to basically working on a system that thousands of people and organizations all around the world use. The White House uses it, the UN uses it.
Oxfam,
you name it. Big businesses, big non-profits use it. And this guy was contributing a great deal to it.
CNN.
And the way that he got into it was he made a website for his primary school when he was in sort of year six or whatever the equivalent is
in
the US. No, he made it because the school system wasn't locked down and he had this window of opportunity and he had a system that he could hack on and play around with. He went from making a website for his school to contributing to the software that runs the website to basically giving a talk on JavaScript at Google when at the age of 12. To now he's 15 or something, and this guy, whatever he wants to do with his life, he's never going to be short of a quid or a job opportunity. And he's a bright kid, but he's not, I wouldn't think he's unusually bright. He's not some sort of freak of nature or anything. He's just a bright kid who was interested in that sort of thing. And if you think about applying the car analogy to this and you say, well, okay, giving kids lockdown laptops, what's so bad about that? When you think like that, you're not considering the potential that may never be exploited because you don't allow kids the freedom to tinker, basically.
I definitely think we're too safe. And, I mean, and, if I was... to think anything about the lockdown laptops. Yeah, we're far too safe.
Yeah.
About the way we do things.
And you know, I mean, loads of people say, "Well, who is Especially ever going to be a computer programmer?" Nobody. I don't know any computer programmers. But the thing is, there was a time when nobody knew any auto mechanics either. And you know, the equivalent, you know, 25 years ago of the kid who's tinkering with software would be the kid who is standing in his driveway with his mates, yeah, all gathered around looking under the bonnet of a car. And, you know, a small percentage of those might eventually go on to become professional auto mechanics.
You should look at, there's a guy on the internet does, I just discovered him.
Actually, guy on the internet?
A guy on the internet, yeah, there's this guy,
I've heard about him.
Brad Sucks. Have you heard of Brad Sucks?
No.
But I've been avoiding him because I thought he was too popular. I thought, oh.
Yeah.
You know, he's like the Spice Girls.
Bastard.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, he seems pretty good. So I'll send you a link to him.
All right.
Yeah, all right. Well, thanks for coming.
No worries. That was good. Yeah, we'll talk about linked data maybe on another one. I don't know.
Yeah.
See how that goes.
Okay.
Let me know when you've got the link up. And I've got to work out how to download the old ones.
Because it's Matthew's crazy org format. Anyone think the rest of the world wasn't open source, Matthew?
Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, that's what it was. I think I'm going to say
DLC it should play it. Yeah.
See you soon.
I'll see you later.
Nice to meet you, David. So, yeah, look.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for the wine. That was really nice.
Oh, thanks for coming around. I must have wasted $3 on you there. No, yeah,
probably.
$1.50, actually.
Yeah, you did. All right. Yeah, if you come around to my place, I'll... return it.
All right, Rodney. Okay. Ride carefully.
Nice to see you, Matt.
Look out for the cops there. I'm going to call them up now and say there's a drunken guy cycling out of Sawtell.
No,
probably.
Rubber rooms and taking fun pills, filling up on notes and dollar bills. It's the price you pay for feeling okay. You're the strangest girl I've ever met, sending weird signals to my head. Fixing my brain, but I'm afraid I won't feel the same. 'Cause baby, it's all I do. I've been thinking about fixing my brain, but I'm afraid I won't feel the same. 'Cause baby, it's all I do. Spending more and more time up in bed, thinking about the things I think you said. It's been on my mind, and it's hard to find. Bad habits come and come and go. I'm afraid my mind is getting slow. Fixing my brain, but I'm afraid I won't feel the same. 'Cause baby, it's all I do. I've been thinking about fixing my brain, but I'm afraid I won't feel the same. 'Cause baby, it's all I do. Just wanna get in the sun again, the sun again, the sun again, the sun again. I swear it's not so hard to understand. I just wanna get in the sun.